Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for a full-time social media manager based in New York City. You can get details at democracynow.org. And a very belated happy birthday to Dina Guzder. Special thank you to the Vermont PBS team here in Colchester, Dave Rice, Holt Albee, Sarah Wentworth, Stephen Weigel, Mike Dunn, Brian Stevenson, Keith Swan, Josh Seekard, and Dana Napomek, as well as Democracy Now!'s Dennis Moynihan, John Hamilton, and Libby Rainey. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Sam Alcock, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Charina Nadura, Tamara Astudio, Mike DeFilippo, and Miguel Nogueira are engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Gran. I'm Amy Goodman from Vermont PBS. Thanks so much for joining us.
Motor City Gems is finally here, WHFR's first indie rock compilation on blue-colored vinyl, featuring 11 great bands from the Detroit area, like The Mugs, The Dogs, Carolyn Streho, The Beggars, The Zots, Dude, and more. Come celebrate with us at our official record release party, Saturday, December 8th, at the Outer Limits Lounge. Performing live on this killer triple bill will be The Mugs, Dude, and The Beggars. Admission is only a $5 donation, and our record will be available for sale for only $14. This is an event you won't want to miss. Outer Limits Lounge is located at 5507 Kniff in Detroit near Hamtramck. For more information, go to outerlimitslounge.com, WHFR.fm, or call WHFR at 313-845-9676. See you at our Motor City Gems record release party Saturday, December 8th. WHFR, the station that truly supports local and independent music. Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
A good Friday afternoon to you. I'm Alan Mazurek. Welcome to another edition of the WHFR Journal here at 89.3 WHFR.fm, Making Waves. I'm Alan Mazurek, and today on our program, we welcome back our friends from the Mirror News, our student newspaper here at Henry Ford College, so that they can tell us a little bit more about the story behind the stories that appear in the student publication, which is distributed here on campus and also available online. Through the Henry Ford College website, hfcc.edu. It's a great learning opportunity, we feel, for them to see what it is to become practicing journalists in a multimedia world where, again, your stories include things like visual content, online content, podcasts, and indeed, as we find more and more, partnerships between broadcast outlets and print outlets. So a good opportunity for them to explore their stories a little bit more in depth, let them tell you a little bit more about their thought process as reporters on the WHFR Journal. So that's what we're going to do today. As always, it goes without saying that the views and opinions expressed by the guests on the WHFR Journal are not necessarily those of WHFR, Henry Ford College, its Board of Trustees, or I suppose in that matter, probably even the entire editorial board of the Mirror News. So let's welcome back in our friends from the Mirror News on today's WHFR Journal.
Hello and welcome back to our show, Mirror News Now. I'm Justin Randles here with Fatima Nakata and Elias Perry.
Hey.
Hello.
And we're going to talk about some of our stories from the previous issue of the Mirror News that came out. And we're going to start out with the Quiet Reflection Room moves to the Eshelman Library. This story was written by Hala Yazdani.
She's our business manager as well.
Yep, she's our business manager. Unfortunately, she can't be here with us today. You guys, we've all had a chance to look over. I mean, it's great that there's this bigger room with some windows and things. What do you guys think about it?
Well, for me, I'm just glad it's moved out of that little broom closet it was in.
Okay.
I'm glad it's moved out because that space was really, really extremely small.
Mm-hmm.
And no windows. Obviously, yeah, you had to keep the door open and all, but it was not fitting to be called a reflection room.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you use the reflection room?
previously where it was, I'd never walked in there because I felt that it was more of a prayer room than a reflection room. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people were using it for prayer. And I felt like I was kind of like invading a sacred space then, you know. But where it's at now, I might pop in.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you think that because of the change in location, you might be more likely to use it?
Yeah, the change in location and the fact that it's also been, it's called a reflection room, not a prayer room.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Which is actually one of my opinions about it. And it's not, I completely support religious freedom of all kinds. Mm-hmm. Personally, I'm not an over-religious guy. But calling it a quiet reflection room is almost like a misnomer. It is a prayer room. It really is.
It is what it is.
And it's almost like I am a meditator. I meditate, yeah. But I never would even consider going in there because, and it's my only thing, is I feel intimidated, like mm-hmm. exactly mm-hmm. like you said. Mm-hmm. I'm invading a space that isn't designed for me. Mm-hmm. And that's my only kind of, I mean, I have lots of complaints in life, but this for like, it's not really a complaint even. It's just, let's call it what it is. Mm-hmm. And also in that it is kind of a prayer room. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I feel like maybe there should be a little bit of separation between school and mm-hmm. church. And mm-hmm. That kind of encroaches in on that area, in my opinion, mm-hmm. of course.
Well, I think you're right. It's definitely a prayer room. Like, I think to call it a meditation room is a bit not truthful. But I think the school has recognized a serious demand from the students. Because, I mean, we're here in Dearborn, obviously. There's a large Muslim population.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And because of the Muslim faith, you need to pray like 5 times a day. Mm-hmm. So school recognized that there's a large portion of the student body that wants a room like this so they don't have to leave campus and go somewhere else to pray. They can just stay and go to the library and then be able to satisfy those requirements. Mm-hmm. And I get what you mean that, like, yeah, it's called something that it isn't, but I feel like it's almost the school trying to find the most appropriate way to satisfy this issue without being overtly pro any one religion.
Right.
No, definitely.
Because if they called it like a mosque, like the mosque room, mm-hmm. then they'd have to make like a temple room, mm-hmm. a one for like Sikhs, a church room. Like they'd have to satisfy everything, but just by calling it a reflection room, you sidestep that problem and then also give the people who need it.
It takes it back to why I would say that now maybe I can walk in. Before I was intimidated, just mm-hmm. like you. And then coming from a Muslim background, I do have Muslim family. I, knowing what I should and shouldn't do in a space where you pray, I'm still a little cautious about walking in. Like, I can't walk into that space with my boots and not having gone through the rituals of cleansing yourself.
Right, right.
I feel like I'm going to offend somebody.
Yeah, do the rules apply?
No,
for
no,
it, the it,
they apply. I think what it is that room is different things to different people. That's,
okay.
That's what it's supposed to
be. I like
be.
The way you said that.
Yeah.
It's different things to different people. But then because I know that for this person, it would probably mean this. And for this person, it would mean this. I have to take that. I take that into account. Like, I would definitely not walk in there with dirty boots or stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, just being respectful of what it means to other people.
Now, Elias, off air, you were kind of telling me that there's a bit of a kerfuffle going on that the prayer mats are being removed.
So, mm-hmm. There's a complaint by a number of Muslim students that prayer mats that were designated for use in the room by students were being removed from the room by either staff members or other students. And like, they were complaining about it, but officials from the school said that they can't keep those in there because it's not a prayer room, because it is a quiet reflection room as it's branded. So that's another instance of that branding being very specific, because like I said before, it's not, they can't call it a mosque room, right? Now, a number of these Muslim students were upset that their, I guess the property or the stuff that they were using in that room was removed, and they'd have to go somewhere else to grab them and bring them back. But I think that's kind of where the gray area is, because to what you're saying, mm-hmm. Fatima, how when you go in there, you'd try to be as respectful as possible, mm-hmm. take off your shoes, be clean when you're going in there, stuff mm-hmm. like that. I think that in the prayer mat is where the gray area lies, because mm-hmm. I think it's great that if you want to do that, mm-hmm. that you do that out of respect for the other people who use it there. But I don't think anyone who uses it or the school or anyone else should expect that to be the case from everyone else.
Exactly. I think it should be a personal choice. And I see a compromise there. Maybe I also don't like the idea of having the room labeled as, okay, this is what it's, just having things that will designate it as a prayer room or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then, if you must have the prayer mats, why can't we just have them stored away somewhere instead of having them, lying around? I don't know
are they
exactly
stacked,
how
they're
kept. I don't know.
Yeah, how they're kept either. I can't speak to that.
So instead of saying, okay, so now I have a question about the prayer mats. Mm-hmm. Now, if I went in there to meditate and I wanted to lift up my hind quarter to sit, would I be allowed to fold one of those up, or would that be sacrilegious for...
What do you mean?
So if I went in there and there's a stack of prayer rugs, but there's no meditation pillows, typically what I do if I don't have a meditation pillow, I'll fold up a blanket. Would I be allowed to fold up one of those the mats and use it as that without offending people?
I think some may be offended.
And maybe that's...
Yeah, some
maybe
that's
what... Maybe they're trying to sidestep that issue.
Yeah.
But what could... An alternative could be have the prayer mats, get some meditation pillows.
But then you have to get a Bible. Have it all stored away, though.
Have it all in a box or something,
but I think the problem is back to what I was saying before. Once you do that, have the meditation pillows and the prayer mats, and you have to get Bibles, you have to get Old Testament, New Testament, you need to get stuff for Sikhs. You have to get everything.
Absolutely.
So I think I can it's totally inconvenient, mm-hmm. and it doesn't make sense from the perspective of the Muslim student trying to go in there, mm-hmm. because why would I have, if I was a Muslim student trying to use that room, why would I need to go talk to someone, mm-hmm. get those prayer mats and bring them back in every single time I wanted to go there, when they're mm-hmm. always going to be used at that room?
Yeah.
But I think the idea is that the school doesn't want to be responsible for getting everything for everybody.
Yeah, the thing is, it's a safe and inclusive environment, and therefore rooms like that must also reflect that. It must be a safe and inclusive environment for everybody. So keeping it neutral is ideal. But then again, let's not forget that the number of students that use it, if you see the largest demographic, are Muslim students as well. They use it the most. So it's kind of like, okay, where do we draw the line?
Yeah, do you come into that a very interesting conundrum of so we have this huge demographic of students that use it specifically for prayer. And then if you include the prayer mats, then you're creating a divide if you don't include other stuff.
But
the last thing I want to see when I come to school is Bibles laying out. And that's just for me. I don't want to be when we have the preachers outside.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't want to come to school and get preached at all. And whenever, this is obviously my opinion, but whenever you involve religion, there's the chance that you're going to get preached at. And
yeah, I wonder if this school could get away with having a box mm-hmm. in the area, and if you want to bring something in, that's yours.
You can keep it safely, yeah.
You can keep it there, but then once you leave it there, you're donating it to the reflection room.
Yeah, and you have to be okay with if a student
anybody using it.
Yeah, to meditate and they fold it up. You can't be like, no, 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 that's not what it's for, but
you
that is
yeah,
what that
you
room
have
is
to lose
for
the life to it.
And anything in it should. So it's really a thin line that the school has to walk. I haven't really thought about it fully until this conversation.
Because I think this is one of those situations where the school will always lose, because the Muslim students feel as though their space to be able to worship is being curtailed a little bit, because the school is imposing, is making them remove the things that are integral to their
to the faith,
their faith and to their prayer. But then also, if the school does anything more than what they're doing now, then they will get blowback from everybody else who doesn't want, like you said, to feel as though religion is becoming a part of the school.
That's, yeah, and that's been my concern.
It's a great space. I love the fact that it's there, but just that confusion right it's like, okay, maybe we shouldn't have it anyway. But then that again is...
And that's the problem. Because then if they don't have it, there's a large demographic on campus that is feeling as though they don't have the amenities to feel comfortable here.
Their needs are not being taken into account, yeah.
And I think it's totally fair that, especially considering the demographics here, that a large number of people do need a room like that.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So I can totally accept and give... credit to that need. I think that's definitely a need that is that's not just, oh well, I want a place for me to be religious. It's a little bit more than that.
I think there's a whole another idea for a story here that could be like, I'd really like to know, like, what is the connection to the mats? Can they be used by other students? Because if that's the case, if a student can use one for sitting on, resting on,
I think what we need, something that would be important to understand, is what it means to different people. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a story in that. If we explore what it means to different people, maybe then we can formulate an understanding for why certain people feel offended or certain people feel a certain way about it.
Yeah.
Because if I understand what it means to you, I'll be cognizant of that fact when I walk into that room. I'll be like, oh, okay. For me, it's somewhere I can go and scream if I'm frustrated or whatever. I don't know if that's allowed, but sometimes I do.
Scream at your own risk.
Sometimes I do want a space where I can just go and scream.
Absolutely.
You know? But yeah, so for me, it might be that. And for others, it might be prayer. And for others, just a place to get away from everybody else, you know?
Yeah.
So it could... Understanding that, I think we can find a middle ground if we understand that.
Yeah, and everyone has to be equally able at all times to use that, which, again, like I was saying before, the school, I think they have to make everybody a little mad in this situation, because having people in there meditating, reading the Bible, praying, and doing all sorts of stuff. Mind you, I don't know how heavily it's used right now. But
I know how the old one was used.
I remember everyone,
it's right next to the Mirror News office, and that
was used pretty frequently.
Pretty frequently,
but not by that many people though.
Yeah.
But now that this is a bigger space, you're probably going to have people of different faiths, if they want to use it, being in there at the same time, and they have to share that space.
I don't think people even knew that old room was there.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's the only, the story is really about the move more so. And it could be a really good idea to follow up with a little bit of,
how do students actually feel about it? I mean,
how do they
say that it has moved now. Okay. Now that it's here, what next? How do you feel about it?
Yeah. How inclusive is it?
Yeah.
How many different people use it? I think that'd be great. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with more Mirror News Now. Stay tuned.
Please Please join WHFR.FM 89.3 for Blues Music on Highway 61, Friday 2 till 4 p.m. Each week, DJ Kitty Love brings the best in new blues releases in Detroit blues to Henry Ford College Radio, WHFR.
One in 26 people will be diagnosed with epilepsy in their lifetime. Are you or is someone you love one in 26? From summer youth camps to an informational hotline, from teen and parent workshops to public policy advocacy, the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan works to improve the lives of people with epilepsy and those who care for them. Become part of the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan. Join in the fight at epilepsymichigan.org. That's epilepsymichigan.org. Together we can stop seizures, find a cure, and overcome challenges created by epilepsy.
Welcome back to Mirror News Now. Again, I'm Justin Randles here with Elias Perry.
Hey.
And we're going to start talking about the Laramie Project, which was a play that a student put on production here at Henry Ford. It's over now, but mm-hmm. I think both of us attended the production, and I think it was powerful enough that we could have a conversation about it.
Yeah.
So I'll give you a little background. The Laramie Project is about a 1998 story of Matthew Shepard, who was a 20-year-old University of Wyoming student who was beaten, robbed, and tied to a fence post and left to die after being picked up at the Fireside Bar on October 6, 1998. And the play... They did a really interesting...
Yeah, the framing used in the play was it's pretty interesting. It wasn't set up like a chronological, like traditional story. It wasn't like you had the characters on stage acting out and the events as they unfolded one by one. It was framed as a theater school or theater program, actually.
Yeah, like a theater troupe.
I think from their technical term. From New York. Went out to Laramie and interviewed a number of the residents about the murder, and we put together those interviews into a play of them going out and talking to a bunch of people and interviewing them. So on stage, the actors played both the theater troupe as well as the people the theater troupe interviewed. And so the story didn't take place during the actual murder. It took place well after, with narrating through both the events of the murder as well as the day-by-day meetings of the different people who went out to Laramie.
And it was almost like less of the Matthew Shepard story and more of the who was affected by the Matthew Shepard story.
Yeah.
The students that put it on, I have to throw a kudos at them, man, because they would switch from dialect on the dime, and they would go from being, you know, having a typical Midwestern accent to mm-hmm. having this Wyoming country,
yeah, like this Old West style, what is it called, twang almost,
I can't even imitate it, but so the students did it. It was a very small cast, and what was unique about our night is one of the students, the actors, had a family emergency.
Yes.
And was replaced by just like somebody
actor.
They called up that came down. He was a professional, or mm-hmm. he is a professional actor. But I was super impressed by that. Like,
yeah. What was also interesting was having him there as context. You kind of, mind you, he didn't have his lines memorized. He did have to just like look off of a script, which, I mean, you can't really blame him.
Yeah.
But still, having him there and acting and having that context of what a professional actor acted like, then to be able to compare that to a lot of the other students who were pretty darn close to being able to emulate what he was like showing, that was pretty impressive to see in those students.
Yeah.
I was
very impressed with the entire production. And I was a junior in high school mm-hmm. when this story came out, and I guess yeah. I could get a little personal with it. Not that I was, I have this deep emotional connection to the story. Mm-hmm. I don't, but I remember how it affected and the brashness of people yeah. back then. I remember there was a moment, my brother was openly gay at this point, and he dealt with a lot of ridicule from school, as did I, which trickled down, which I'm not trying to take credit for him, mm-hmm. but it would be like, oh, he's gay, you must be too, kind of thing. Yeah. Like it runs in the blood. But I remember some people would say this things that were said in the play. Like if you remember, when they were doing like the police interview
yeah.
of the murderer, and he said, well, he hit on me. And I remember like kids and adults saying, well, I might have done the same thing if, and I was just even yeah. then I was like, are you kidding me? Like, the relations have definitely changed since then. But I'm not sure.
See, I don't know. 'Cause I mean, of course nowadays in like 2018, if you were to say that out in public, being a bigot is right now the worst thing you can be, worse than any of X minority group.
Like, yeah.
Being called a bigot, is also one of the worst things that can be said about you, for the vast number of people. So I think if you went out in public and said like, oh, if he hit on me, then I might've done the same thing.
Right.
If you say something like that in public now, you're going to get like blowback from that. You're going to get ostracized for being so overtly discriminatory. But I don't know if that means that the actual fabric, the actual lifeblood of society has changed all that much. Because, I mean, it was what? When did this happen? Just
20 years
a few
ago.
Decades
this
ago?
This is a 20-year yeah. anniversary. That's why they did the production when they did, is it's 20-year anniversary.
I mean, 20 years isn't that long of a time. Those people are still alive. The people who would be around at that time, even older folks, are still alive. I think within like the last few years, we've kind of convinced ourselves that we live in this period of pure enlightenment where nothing like the sins of the past can come back again. But I think what Laramie does best is put a lot of what's happening in context. It shows that this happened not too long ago mm-hmm. and can very well happen again. But what's also really impressive and really, I have to give props to the play as well as the cast for this. Throughout the play, members of the town said, oh, this could never happen in Laramie. This could never happen in Laramie.
Yeah, we're not this type of people. Laramie doesn't hate. Like that was yeah. really the driven message. You're absolutely right.
But and then by the end of it, the message was pretty clear that anywhere can be a Laramie. It doesn't absolutely. Have to be in the middle of nowhere out in Oklahoma in a small town of a few hundred people. It can be here. It can be Dearborn. It can be Westland. It can be Canton. It can be anywhere. And I think people who don't have to deal with that as much don't really understand that and can lull themselves into this feeling that, we're so advanced now. We're so socially aware. Things like this can't happen anywhere but the most remote villages in the country.
Yeah.
When that's just not true.
Yeah, and as you know, I was saying earlier, you know, I feel like we've progressed from there up until the last couple of years. I did feel like that. Mm-hmm. And then the hate is happening every day around mm-hmm. us again, and it's now it's the homophobia is targeted
yeah.
A little bit more specifically towards transgenders.
Yeah.
I don't know. I want to say people are becoming more progressive, or maybe I'm just around more progressive people. I don't know, but if nonsense starts happening in my family, and my family can, has a little nonsense, I always speak up.
That's one of the things. I mean, you have what's happening now, and I'm not putting blame on anybody for what's happening now. But I think we can come to some sort of agreement that now there's a little, people are a little bit more outspoken with their, we'll say, disapproval of different groups. To differing extremes, some it's outright hate, some it's just
like that maybe passive.
Some it's just passive and it's not active, so it's not harming anyone, but it's still there. And then a few years before, we had this period of extreme openness, almost to the opposite degree of what it is now. So you were targeted if you were openly hateful or even could appear to be openly hateful. So my question is, which one of those is the norm and which one of those is diverting from the norm? Was the path that people are just naturally right now a bit hateful, in that period of like extreme counter hate, I guess if you want to call it, was the weird period, was the off period, and stuff like what happened 20 years ago is where our country's at? Or is it the other way around, where our country is very open and tends towards being more progressive and more inclusive, but now we're having this kind of off period? I don't know, and I don't think anyone can really make that claim until we're out of this, which is kind of what's unsettling.
Yeah, I think I think hate will always exist.
For sure.
But what I love about today's day and age is hate is met with love almost instantly nowadays. You know, you see it on social media. And it, when I say like the passive hate, that to me is the most dangerous kind. It's that, oh, well, I'm not a racist, I'm not a homophobe, but. And it's like this, they're trying to, the Bible says this, or whatever lame excuse that they have to be hateful. But what I love, I don't know if hate is going to ever go anywhere, but I believe that as the generations come and go and our younger generations come up, I do want to believe that kids are more tolerant these days.
I think that it's all about like that passivity. It's whether or not you by your nature are more open or more closed off, because at the end of the day, when you say that the passivity is what's so dangerous, I mean, people are openly violent, openly hateful, of course, the most violent, but it's the people who are passive who push society. Yeah. So if you're passively more open, you're going to push society in that direction just by your nature. If you're passively more closed, then you're going to push society in the opposite direction.
Yeah. Why don't we change gears a little bit and let's talk about this really interesting piece in the Kaleidoscope from this issue, which is the Armageddon Beach Party, or as the writer Jessica Delafonso has eloquently put it, welcome to the ends of the world with Detroit's ambassadors of psychedelia. And I was able to go down to this. It's half a store and half an art gallery. And
is everything for sale?
It is, okay. And you can buy prints. You know, as low as it's like an affordable art gallery. There was one picture in particular that I was really drawn to, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. But let me give you kind of an overview of what we're talking about here. The Armageddon Beach Party is a storefront that also has the coffee and things like that. You can buy the art. More specifically, you can buy prints of the art, which is for, you know, more cost effective. But it's comprised of a husband and wife duo who I met, and they are probably the most adorable couple I've ever seen. They have matching hair colors. Their names are Aubrey and Elena Smith, and the Armageddon Beach Party opened their storefront in July in a strip mall at the corner of Putnam and Trumbull Avenue, which is kind of an up-and-coming neighborhood. And I went there for Halloween, for a Halloween party. And it's some very intriguing art. There's a couple of pictures that really spoke to me. But you know, what did you think from reading this story? And
so my first question is, I mean, the title suggests it. Is the art very psychedelic in nature? Very, like, I guess, 70s-esque?
It's not it is psychedelic, okay. Absolutely. It's not 70s-esque, though. Like, okay. The lettering, the font of the story piece would suggest that.
Yeah.
But it's just very, it's very, psychedelic. Like, there's.
And out there?
Yeah, out there, but it's easy to interpret. Sometimes art can be really confusing.
Yeah.
If you're not like an art major from Yale, it could be like, okay, yeah. I see this painting, but it just looks like a bunch of paint. Here, you know what you're looking at, and I feel like you kind of know what they're also trying to say. Mm-hmm. There was one picture, and art's always, its interpretation is of the beholder. Whoever's looking at it, their interpretation is absolutely right. That's what I've always been told. There's this one specific picture that I loved, and it's like this couple. And they're flying into each other in outer space, and they're coming into an embrace. But in the moment of the embrace, they are ripping each other's hearts out simultaneously, and they have each other's hearts in their hands. And I saw this as like the violent truth of what love really is. It's like, yeah, you get this bonus of being in love, but you're also really risking yourself of getting that heart just stomped on. And I was really drawn to that piece specifically.
That's interesting. So like, I guess then the couple's actual relationship, the dynamics of that influences a lot of what they produce.
I think they probably get a lot of influence from their own relationships. Yeah. I think they probably get a lot of influence from cannabis and other psychedelics, for sure. But there's this one piece, it's got a lot of like third eye, holistic health type vibe to it. Like, you know, like healing crystal. I don't know. When I was in there, I felt like there was healing crystals all over the place. There was some Tibetan meditation bowls, which is screams me, you know, like it just drew me in. However, sometimes the art doesn't really coincide with that, but it's of that nature. It seems to be of a free love, free mind type of nature.
So did it just open up?
They opened their doors in July.
Okay.
And so the Halloween party, they had some like, you could get like a cup of beer, but they had some really small time artists doing what's called lo-fi hip hop.
Oh, wow. And
actually like there's these two guys, one of the artists was just one guy. He would make noises into a microphone and sometimes do some verses, and then another guy on a synthesizer.
Yeah,
and they would take noises from the crowd and then
crowd interaction. That must feel pretty cool to be a part of.
Well, the crowd, let's be fair, was about 8 people deep.
Oh, okay.
But there was crowd interaction. There was the closing band was particularly. They were a totally different vibe. It was almost like a Trump, like a ska type rock, but heavy emphasis on the trumpet, which I love trumpet in music. And they were very engaging. That's when the crowd started coming in. That's actually right around when I left. I stayed for a couple songs, but it wasn't like a party. It wasn't a very comfortable party. It wasn't, there was no chairs. Everybody was standing around. They probably could have made it a little more comfortable for
they're trying to get you to buy stuff. And
I think so. And it almost worked. Had I had some cash on me, I would have definitely got that picture. And I think someday I'll go back just to remind myself of how violent love can be.
So how much like is the actual art? Like on average, if you wanted to go there and pick up a decent piece,
If you want like an original piece or a print.
Or how about both? Like how much is each?
A print, the smaller prints were only $20 and they would go up to like 40, 45, very affordable. You know, you could get a 24x12 print or something. I don't know if that's the dimensions, but you get the idea of the size. And the smaller prints are more like a shoebox size.
And those were about $20. And the original art pieces could range anywhere from a few hundred to over $1,000. And that's all we have for you today. Well, stay tuned, though, because we've got sports coming up with Joshua Bear and his crew, which is always a great show.
Don't miss that.
Yep. And thank you for tuning us on Mirror News Now. Tune in next time for some more great content we've got coming to you. This is WHFR, and we are
Making Waves.
I'm Amy Brown, Executive Director of the NOAA Project. Our mission is to empower low-income and homeless Detroiters to achieve stability by serving as the first step on the journey to self-sufficiency. We invite you to partner with us by visiting our website, noaaprojectdetroit.org. Our bag lunch, which feeds over 500 participants weekly, is what brings people in the door. And then we work with them to address other issues such as housing, food, and transportation through one-on-one case management. We welcome you to be part of NOAA by helping serve lunches or collecting basic needs items such as gloves, hats, underwear, or socks. Please like us on Facebook, visit our website, noaaprojectdetroit.org, or email us at info@noaaprojectdetroit to learn more. My love is strong.
Hi, I'm Andy Parks, the host of Strictly Gospel. Join me every Sunday afternoon when we'll have nothing but the very best in gospel jazz, gospel hip-hop, urban contemporary, and praise and worship. You name it, all things gospel, but Strictly Gospel on the station that's making waves, WHFR.FM. Your mercies are new every
morning. I know who you are.
This is Jonathan Weigel, host of Songwriter Symposium. 2018 Detroit Music Award winner Emily Rose has just released her new studio record called Wake Up Brave. Emily will be joining me live in studio this coming Sunday to talk about songwriting, her new record, and to play some live music for us. So join me this coming Sunday, December 2nd at 5 o'clock, right here on WHFR. I'm at
the bottom. Welcome back. It's the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw, as we welcome back our friends from the Mirror News for Mirror News Now, which is sort of a new addition to our program, where we give a chance for our students and journalists that work for the newspaper here on campus to come in, talk about their stories, and talk about things that are going on here on campus and in their lives. Josh Hebert, very nice to have you back in our studios as always. As we continue with our next segment on Mirror News Now here on the WHFR Journal.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having us back here after the last little fun time we had. Again, I'm glad to welcome in my two co-hosts, Dominic Stankiewicz and Emily Schroeder.
Hey, thanks for having me again. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. So, Emily, you guys are in the middle of the season for volleyball. What are you guys looking at? You guys have improved from last year. How are you guys going to finish off this playoff push?
Well, we're kind of just working on, like, defense a lot because, you know, we're coming to the end, so we're starting to see, like, harder hitters, things like that. Especially hitting too, we need to find spots on the court because people are starting to play defense better against us, and they're starting to see our stats and things, so they're looking at what we're doing and watching our videos because you can do that, obviously. And so we're just working on the basics still. I mean, even but we're like pushing harder for them. It's the same thing we do every day in practice, but we're just working around each team that we're playing and watching what they're doing and watching videos on them and looking at their stats and seeing, like, who's the best passer, who do we need to be on blocking, and just sort of that.
You guys brought in a new coach, Diane Phillips, this season. How has she helped improve your team overall as from season one to season two?
Well, I
didn't know Diane at all, and most of the team does because she's from around here and I'm not originally from here. And she pushes us a lot. So she is just really like encouraging, but she also is very strict on us. She's always on us at practice, but she's always telling us what we can do better, which is super helpful. Just having that extra hand, which we didn't really have that last year. So instead of having two coaches, we have three. So if one girl's talking to the main coach, we can always talk to Diane, and she's the real deal. And she just coached for like a really long time at Dearborn. So she knows what she's doing and she really knows her stuff.
Ending up, how is the team chemistry, and how is that going to help you progress into later in the season and into the playoffs?
Our chemistry is different this year. It's taking longer for us to click this year, which I find it difficult. We are starting to find our like groove, I guess you could say, and that's always nice. And I mean, chemistry's big, especially in volleyball. I mean, it's a really big team sport. So if you don't have chemistry, then we're not going to get very far. And I think that we're learning slowly how to work with each other and like who clicks with who and who works in back row together. And not only us, we have to see that, but the coaches need to see that. And I think they are starting to figure out who needs to be on the court together and who works well. So
I'm going on with that chemistry. How do you see your roller hockey team as like a group for the team chemistry with that, going on to what Emily said about the volleyball team?
For the hockey team, we've added a few new guys that are obviously going to need to develop into the chemistry that I think six of the returners had last year. So honestly, I really don't think it's going to be that hard. I think the new goalie is going to need to be broken in a little bit too. I know our first tournament went kind of downhill, so he's going to need to obviously step it up, and we're going to have to keep communicating to him. Like, it's not a big deal. Keep pushing. We're going to keep working him hard in practice and hopefully gain his confidence back throughout the season. But chemistry-wise, I know a few of our guys are going to get, better as it progresses, but right now we're kind of struggling with that. So,
okay. And Emily, ending up with the volleyball story, how do you guys feel that you guys will be – I know this is your last season. How do you feel that the team will be able to progress going forward?
Well, we're a young team this year, so there's only three of us sophomores, so they're only missing three people. So that's really good for the recruiting process because you don't have to get all these new girls. And with the team being so young, they get to move on in next season together, and they've already played one time together, so that really helps. And I've always been on a team where there's been fewer of my grade than everyone else. So I know it's when you're working with your own grade and your own age, it really helps. And they should be really strong next year. I mean, they don't really have another excuse because they're all there and they're all coming back. So
okay, thank you. And now we move over to Dom. You were able to go and follow the wrestling team a little bit. Being a newer team, like you guys were in roller hockey last year and like volleyball and Emily were last year, what do you see from them that they were able to do last season and able to carry over this year?
Oh, I know they have a few. They only brought back six wrestlers and they added 16. But like looking at like the achievements from last year, I know there was a few guys. Darian Holmes, for example, he took first place in the 285 pound weight division, so that's always good. And then Austin and Jordan took second place in their respective weight classes. Honestly, I have no idea what their weight classes were, but I don't remember if those guys are on the team still, but if they are, I mean, hoping to progress other guys in their weight division, to become, first place or get close to it at least. So,
last year they finished fifth place as an overall team. What were some of the things that they were looking at improving this year?
The newer guys obviously don't have a taste of what college wrestling is going to bring, so making sure they grind to become you know, tip-top shape to compete in this college, what do you want to, season or tournaments, whatever you want to call it, because I know they play a lot of tournaments. So mostly just getting those guys ready to play those big teams, and, yeah, like I said, just making sure they're ready to go.
Coming in, they already had a coach in Grant McKenzie who won Coach of the Year in the Great Lakes Conference 3 years before the team actually became a varsity team. What were they looking? What was he looking forward to doing later this year?
He's just looking, like I said, with the other kids, like developing these kids, you know, their futures. I mean, he's not just going to focus on strictly wrestling, because at the end of the day, like, me and Emily are here not just to play sports, but we're here to get, like, a good education. And I honestly think that's what he really stressed to me, was that he's not really going to focus on the wrestling part, even though that's, like, obviously a big component of the team, but, like, furthering those kids' careers and futures to become successful, obviously, in this society. So that's what I got from him.
Emily, you guys were also a first-year varsity team last year. Wrestling was a first-year varsity team last year. What were some of the struggles that you guys had to face? You guys, volleyball coming in out of nowhere, and wrestling making that transition.
I think the biggest thing was having, I don't know, working together, because we didn't know any of each other at all, which is like super common, I guess, for college. But at the same time, it's a two-year program we just restarted, so nobody knew each other. So it's completely new people. Building that chemistry is not easy, and that's probably the biggest thing. And then on top of that, I think even saying with like what Dom said with the academics, like following with that and playing a sport, I think that was super hard on everybody, and you really have to learn how to do that in the first few weeks. It's a big struggle.
Okay, Dom, you guys are a club sport right now. Wrestling was a club sport. What do you think the transition was from them making it a club to varsity, you knowing the club side of things?
Us being a club sport, I really don't think we can really compare to a varsity, or I think we can compare to a varsity sport. I honestly think we're the exact same. We play bigger schools. So we play Michigan State, we've played Penn State, we've played Robert Morris. I mean, we play Michigan. So honestly, I really don't think it's going to be a big difference for them transitioning. I mean, I don't know what schools they play. I think they're probably staying around what you guys play. So like Macomb or Schoolcraft, around those lines. So I really don't think it's going to be that tough. But I mean, I don't follow wrestling, so maybe it could be. So the grind's just going to be, you know, that much harder if it is a step up from a club to varsity.
Okay, thank you. And then the final thing that we had in this issue of the Mirror News was we brought in the golf team, and they had a female golfer for the first time ever to play golf here at Henry Ford. And I was able to sit and talk with Alana Jones, who is the first female golfer here, and just was able to pick her brain a little bit on how she went from high school to the college team and what she was able to do differently. And one of the things she said is being at college, she's able to prepare a little bit differently than she was in high school. I don't know if that's the same for you guys, preparing a little differently, different equipment here at the college than you guys probably had at high school. So I don't know. What is your guys' thought on that?
I mean, in high school, with playing a sport, it's completely different because when you're in high school, you kind of have more time. And I feel like there's not as much pressure. And in college, like, you have to go to everything. You can't be late. Like, it's a lot. And then school-wise, you want to be successful, especially here, because I know I'm trying to transfer, so my grades have to be up all the time. And then I'm in the honors program, too, so that really adds to it. It's a huge transformation, so it doesn't surprise me that she feels that way.
Yeah, I totally agree with Emily. Like, transformation from high school to college, like, completely different. For my high school, like, at our hockey games, like, the atmosphere was unreal. Like, we had a huge crowd. The students were really getting into it. And it's the exact same for college. I mean, we don't have a lot of students that go there because Like, who wants to watch roller hockey? Like, I'm kind of the same way, but at the same time, like, we have so many parents that come there and then other kids from other schools that, like, want to support them are there. So it gets, like, it honestly gets crazy when, like, I'm in net and, like, you letting a goal and you got kids, you know, chirping you behind the net, like, saying you're terrible. So I honestly really didn't have that in high school. I think one game against, like, Dearborn Unified was the only game I got, like, chirped for. But, I mean, I shut them out, so it's really not a big deal. But, yeah.
Another thing that she didn't mention was how crazy it was that she was able to be part of the golf team here, because it is a men's team. What she said is that it's crazy, but at the same time, it could be a good challenge for her to increase her skill level. So that was something that I took out of what she said, is able to go and compete at another level that isn't high school, it isn't a women's college team, but it's another step off from that. Emily, what would you think about that if, say, there wasn't a women's volleyball team, but there was a guys' volleyball team or whatever here at Henry Ford?
I mean, being a female, I think that's just super hype that she's even... I mean, that takes a lot for her to do that. I know that can be probably, like, I mean, intimidating at times because, I mean, she's with a bunch of guys, and that's what she's doing, which I give her a whole bunch of credit, and I think it's awesome. And I think that's good that we're getting her in here so other females can say, you know, hey, like, yeah, it might be a dominating male sport, but, you know, as females, like, they can also be in it, and I think that's really cool.
Okay. One other thing, and possibly the last thing of, like, major importance that Alana didn't mention, was that if you're a golfer in high school, if you're a female golfer in high school, look at Henry Ford for the golf team, because she said that the team was very helpful in bringing her into this atmosphere of college golf and helped her develop a little bit more in the fall season, which... like roller hockey, Dom.
Yeah.
It's split into two different seasons.
Yep.
One in the fall and then spring. You guys have the same with fall and winter for roller hockey. So how much of a challenge is that, just having that big break in between the two halves of your season?
I think for golf, it's not going to be a huge challenge for her, just because... Actually, I mean, I could be, so... During the fall time and the winter, like, obviously that's going to suck because, like, you can't play golf out, like, outdoors because it's cold and there's snow. So she's obviously going to have to hit in a dome. And I don't think there's any indoor courses, obviously, that are in domes. So, honestly, she's just going to need to work on, like, her driving and obviously chipping in domes. But for us, I wouldn't say it's not as hard because we play indoors and... like, obviously there's a limited amount of roller hockey rinks around, but at the same time, like, we can play whenever we want, honestly. We just have to rent the floor out. But at the same time, off that, we don't have the biggest budget to spend money on practice whenever we want to. So it's kind of just picking apart what days we want to go practice and what days are going to be, you know, the best times and when we're going to play the best to improve to be ready for next season. So I think overall it's going to be harder for her because, I mean, there's no courses indoors. She's going to have to just work on each club one at a time in a dome. And I don't know how she could do it. I tried golf, absolutely hated it, and I quit. So I'm going to stick with hockey.
Okay, Dom, Emily, thank you guys very much for coming back with me to host this little nice cozy program. Alan, Susan, thank you for having us again. For Dominic and Emily, I'm Josh Hebert. Thank you guys, and have a good weekend.
Good morning, everyone. This is Bill. I am the host of a show called The World Through Music. I would like to invite you to meet me every Monday morning at 12 o'clock as we travel the world. We travel different cities, different countries, and take you to places we couldn't go without the art of music. So join me, Bill, every Monday, 12 until 2, as we travel all the world by music.
Motor City Gems is finally here, WHFR's first indie rock compilation on blue-colored vinyl. featuring 11 great bands from the Detroit area, like The Mugs, The Dogs, Carolyn Streho, The Beggars, The Zots, Dude, and more. Come celebrate with us at our official record release party, Saturday, December 8th, at the Outer Limits Lounge. Performing live on this killer triple bill will be The Mugs, Dude, and The Beggars. Admission is only a $5 donation, and our record will be available for sale for only $14. This is an event you won't want to miss. Outer Limits Lounge is located at 5507 Kniff in Detroit near Hamtramck. For more information, go to outerlimitslounge.com, whfr.fm, or call WHFR at 313-845-9676. See you at our Motor City Gems record release party Saturday, December 8th. WHFR, the station that truly supports local and independent music.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener supported, non-commercial radio.
Clarksdale, south of Memphis, Tennessee.